Good evening, this is Mae Brussel. The title of this one-hour program is World Watchers. It is program number 808, and it is June the 1st, 1987. This is the 20th anniversary of Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band. I don't know how many of you were involved in enjoying the music 20 years ago. Ted Koppel had two guests on his Nightline last Friday night, one Bob Green from Newsday, who also writes books, and a symphony conductor who was influenced by the Beatles and Sgt. Pepper's, the music of the Beatles in this particular album 20 years ago. Bob Green told about being in a fraternity, and there was one phonograph, and then he and his roommate each had their own Sgt. Pepper. It was important that each one collected his own, and he said down the fraternity row you would hear different cuts of the music. And everybody in each house, of course, had their albums, one or more per house, and particularly per each individual. I laughed about that because as my children grew up and went to a school out of town, and some moved to L.A., and they moved around the country, they left a lot of their record collection at the home, in my home here. Some they have with them, and some they left here. And I went to my Beatles section and pulled out six Beatle albums of Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band. Each one of the family had it except my husband, who didn't understand it at all. And these albums are well worn out. If you look at them, they were handled over and over again. So I don't have to tell you exactly what it meant to me, but I might share just a few thoughts about it. George Harrison's song, I liked all the cuts, of course, but George Harrison's song was something new for me hearing in music, considering what we had through the 40s and 50s and the early music up to that time. Without You is the song where he's asking to examine the space between us, and he says that people who hide themselves behind a wall of illusion and never glimpse at the truth, then it's too late and they pass away. They have never seen it and they die. And he said the truth is about love, about sharing, to find out the best there is. With love, we could save the world if they only knew. Try to realize it is within you, he said. You remember those words, within yourself. No one can make you change. You have to make yourself change. And to see you're really only very small. You don't have to be big to change the world. And life flows on within you, either in you or without you. Whether you partake of this world or not, it goes on without you. He said, we're talking about love that's gone so cold, and the people who gain the world and lose their soul. And you might think of that. Ronald Reagan was governor of California for 1 year at the time this was produced. And they didn't know Reagan at the time, but they had a view of the world, and George Harrison was, all of them were very bright. And the song goes on to say, they gain the world and lose their soul, they don't know, and they can't see. And are you one of them? He asks. And then the ending goes, all the time will come, and the time will come when we'll see we are all one, and that life flows on within you and without you. Whether, if you want to be in you, it's there. If you don't partake, it goes on without you. And that was just one cut from the album, and of course in those days and from then on and before then, I was influenced by the early Beatles, and this is the album that seems to get so much attention. Well, 1967, I just pulled out about six or seven dates of important things that were happening the year of Sgt. Pepper. It wasn't all Sgt. Pepper that was going on. In April of 67, 2 months before that came out, General Westmoreland was protesting against the war resistors in the United States, and he was telling Lyndon Johnson that we must bomb industrial targets harder in Southeast Asia. 1967 was the year to halt the attempt to get Fidel Castro, call off the Cuban War. And I bring this up because I'm going to mention again the lawsuit of the Christic Institute, where the original team of the Iran-Contra Gators, who worked in the Bay of Pigs, were diverted to other areas and left Castro as is while they began to change the world and leave that particular island as a whipping boy. 1967 in June was the time the Israelis attacked the U.S. Liberty ship. 35 were killed, 75 were wounded, and nobody paid any attention to it at all. In 1976 is when the United States government began secretly sending bonds to Taiwan, Korea, Chile, and Israel. 1967 is the year Jack Ruby died. He asked Earl Warren to take him out of Texas. Gerald Ford was there as a member of the Warren Commission. He said, "Take me to Washington where I can talk. You have the power to take me. And if I'm eliminated, there won't be any way of knowing. I can't say it here. I may not live even tomorrow to give testimony." He was ready to have a hearing before the judge at Wichita Falls. He was dying in the jail, and they took him to Parkland Hospital when he died. 1967 was the year, 1 year before Robert Kennedy was assassinated in California, but the year that Edwin Meese and Ronald Reagan set up the Garden Plot, known as Operation Splicer, with help of the Georgia National Guard, and this was the beginning of the SWAT teams to round up dissidents in case there were riots again. And in 1967 is when Daniel Ludwig, one of the richest men in the world, went to Brazil to begin a large tree forest, but took access to the northern part of Brazil, hundreds and hundreds of acres, thousands of acres of Brazil. And CIF Project Merrimack began in 1967. This was the CIA work with the FBI, and Merrimack were the plans against black leaders, Malcolm X, Martin Luther King, and black leaders. And 1967 is when John Mitchell and Richard Nixon began to combine their law offices and merge together. And then Mitchell went on to be Attorney General and then on to jail. Nixon became the president in 1968, 1 year later. David Ferry in New Orleans died in 1967, February 67, just a month after Jack Ruby died, and these two fellows were acquainted. Jim Garrison planned to arrest Ferry, and a couple of days later he was dead of a karate chop on the head, and a person with him also died in Florida shortly afterwards. 67 was the time that Thieu was in control of Vietnam, and the priests were burning themselves on the streets in Saigon. And in April of 67, just 2 months before the Sgt. Pepper album came out, there was a military coup in Athens put in by the CIA Litton Industry. And so a lot was happening. This was the first Nazi regime in Athens with swastikas and so forth since World War II. George Lincoln Rockwell was killed in 1967. Lee Harvey Oswald kept his name in his notebook. This is the American Nazi Party. It didn't end the Nazi Party in California. It turned it over to the Defense Department. And Che Guevara was killed in Bolivia, and I'll do more on that later this week or next week in great detail. The murder of Che Guevara that involved Mr. Gomez Rodriguez, who you saw on television testifying this week, and the Central Intelligence Agency with Klaus Barbie and the Bolivian police, all working together in 1967. Dr. Mary Sherman, a friend of David Ferry's, who attended the Bilderberger meeting in England, was killed in New Orleans. Clay Shaw was dead. He had no trial. Clay Shaw was arrested. He died later at the time in about 19. It was the time the House Select Committee was investigating the assassinations. Clay Shaw was arrested by Jim Garrison. And this was the time that he was pulled in. This was the first charge of conspiracy in the Kennedy assassination that went to court. And in 1967, the CIA Operation Phoenix was going full-blown in Vietnam, where 40,000 non-military people were killed, women, children, parents, grandparents in huts, and that involved the Iran-Contra Gators, General John Seelenlaub, General Richard Secord, CIA Theodore Shackley, CIA Thomas Kleins, CIA Chichi Quintero, CIA Gomez Rodriguez. They were all involved in Southeast Asia with William Colby and the Phoenix program. An Australian prime minister disappeared. He went swimming and drowned. An ex-OSS gentleman, Jim Thompson, disappeared. The Silk King from Thailand disappeared, and his sister was murdered 5 months later. And I bring this up because the idealism that George Harrison had was sounding good and giving hope to a generation who should both balance the events of the world and the enjoyment of the music or the message of the music and not be lulled to thinking we are all one and therefore there is peace. There was this contradiction going on, and I was a part of both of them studying the political conspiracies, but very much enjoying the music. There'll be the 20th anniversary of Monterey Pop this summer. And we bought 7 tickets to every single performance so all the children could go and hear each of these artists. We participated in the music scene, and in the scene a great deal, where I literally dropped out from what I was until I had moved up to Carmel about 1965. But a person cannot afford to enjoy one thing at the expense of other. You can enjoy the music, but you have to get more political. People have to get more political at the same time, because the political people don't stop because of the few words of music. Now, I mentioned the Persian Gulf incident being like the Gulf of Tonkin for Ronald Reagan. I just want to tell you about another diversionary, and interestingly enough, it was written in a book by William Sullivan of the FBI shortly before he died. He was the head of Division 5 of FBI, and he tells how he didn't believe that James Earl Ray acted alone in the murder of Martin Luther King. But in his book, The Bureau, he explains that the British had arrested James Earl Ray 2 days before the announcement was released. Sullivan said Ray was in custody in London for 2 days before J. Edgar Hoover released the story to the press. He waited until the day of Robert Kennedy's funeral to break the news so that the FBI could steal the headline from the Kennedys one last time. So the same people were behind the murder of Martin Luther King as Robert Kennedy. So the synchronicity was really great, letting James Earl Ray go to London and Portugal and back to London. And then in the interim of the 2 months, while he's living high over in Europe, and has gone there with passports with the help of a lot of other people, Robert Kennedy is murdered. Kennedy participated in the Martin Luther King funeral. Then the day that Kennedy was buried, the headlines, according to William Sullivan, who was close to all of these scenes, were taken away by James Earl Ray being pronounced caught in London. They already had him and probably knew where he was every hour up to years before Martin Luther King was killed. J. Edgar Hoover was after Martin Luther King. That all is part of American history. But it's interesting in the synchronicity, because I think of the diversion of the Persian Gulf at this time and the controversies about Stark, the USS Stark, because I believe it was an agent provocateur incident to take the attention off the Iran-Contra hearings and make the president commander-in-chief if he wants to declare war. The new issue of Freedom Magazine has 2 articles, a continuing research article by L. Fletcher Prouty called Visions of a Kennedy Dynasty. And then they have a chapter or a section from Jim Garrison's new book titled Coup d'etat. The section is called The Murdered Talents of the CIA. And this is very important to the lawsuit the Christic Institute has, to the Iran-Contra affair, because the people Jim Garrison is writing about are the people involved with the Iran-Contra Christic Institute suit. I'll do more on this article later. You can send for it. So you should subscribe to Freedom. They're doing a wonderful job. The address is 1301 North Catalina Street, and it's LA 90027. I suggest you help support these people with the wonderful work they're getting out. And as I say, I'll detail these articles later. Now, the affidavit of the Christic Institute is getting a lot of play on the FM radio stations and a lot of discussion, and people are calling me all the time. Listen to this station. Have you heard this? Have you heard KKUP, KPFA? And they're mentioning the times that the information is on the air. A tape was made by Daniel Sheehan, who filed the lawsuit against specific Iran contragators, filed it 1 year before Mr. Hassanfuss landed. Well, it was filed about a half a year before he landed in Nicaragua, but it covers these people, and it was detailed long before these men became household words or became familiar to the American public. And Danny Sheehan said in the affidavit, these defendants, some have been tagged by press as contrapreneurs, represent the epitome of organized crime, but on an international scale. They deal wholesale in narcotics, drugs, illegal weapons, and violence. Rather than take over local businesses, they seek to take over whole nations. This is the affidavit, the beginning of it. They do not hesitate to murder, and destroy anyone or anything that gets in their way. By any definition, the defendants in this suit are alleged merchants of heroin and terrorism, are organized criminals on a scale larger than life. And all of that is true. Now, in going into the secret team's history of political assassinations, and this affidavit was filed, as I say, in May, it's a year now, May 1986, I want to add to this because so many people are getting attention to what the Christic Institute has done, and it is the most challenging and the most encouraging thing to be able to catch in a net these very, very important people of the secret team, such as Robert Owen and John Singlaub and Theodore Shackley and Albert Hakim and Thomas Kleins and Chichi Quintero and General Secord. But it's also important because this may be the only chance that America will ever have again to get this team identified properly. And if you're off course, if you take a place in the road that takes you to the wrong diversionary, if you take one little side road, it won't take you to where you're going. It is very important in this time and place to be exactly on target, because if you miss a little bit, you miss the whole thing. And the secret team is referred to in the newspapers over and over again. You see articles about the secret team. The secret team, the secret team, conspiracy, conspiracy. Now, I want to go back, just to set the record straight, to just an article that was written about a lecture or a series of lectures I gave in New York City in 1975. It was written by Charles Packard called May Brussels Conspiracy Farm. I was talking at the Elgin Theater. This was in December of 1985, and I was saying that the members of these secret teams should be put into a conspiracy farm, retire them, give them a pension, and get them out of public life. And that's very important because people like John Singlaub were taken out of duty. He resigned because of conflicts with Jimmy Carter, but then he goes on to run a secret government. G. Gordon Liddy is running training camps for terrorists. And E. Howard Hunt and James McCord, the Watergate people, are out probably continuing what they did before. And we see Richard Nixon getting medals in Paris, an honorarium. The secret team was not put out of public life. They were allowed to continue what they were doing, and they're even more effective out of the public life because then they can say, I'm a private citizen. If you notice, the Iran-Contra gators say, I'm a private citizen. Colonel Dutton leaves the Air Force, the military, May the 1st, and on the May the 2nd, he goes to TCI, Stanford Technology Training Group, and he's ready to work. Robert McFarland leaves the National Security Council, goes to his home. He's former National Security Director. Then the next day, they put in the NSC computers, the tapes, the secret banks, and he starts traveling around with members of the NSC, but he says former. And once they're former, I said they should be put in the conspiracy farm. Now, I'm not going to do the whole article that he did about me. Most of it I will. It was published in the Soho Weekly News, December 25th, 1975. If you send a self-addressed stamped envelope, a long envelope, legal size, I'll send you a copy of the article. But this is what he said, and I want you to think of it in terms of the Christic Institute suit. Forget the Iran-Contra hearings. I mean, they're complete washouts. We'll do more on that later. But think of the Christic suit, and then think of 12 years ago, what I was saying, and what we have to add, what Danny Sheehan and the others back there have to add to what they have to get on the right road and not be diverted and not lose these big fish by taking the wrong turn on the road. The article says, May Brussels conspiracy theories, in her own words, are outrageous to many people. The three-capacity audiences who flocked to the Elgin Theater last Thursday, December 18th, I did morning, noon, and night, came to see if Brussels' theories live up to her claim. They couldn't have walked away disappointed. Laden with stacks of newspaper clippings, evidence from the Warren Commission, copies of documents from the National Archives, the California researcher Facts, testimony, figures, and personal conjectures in an attempt to expose the tentacles of conspiracies originating from the highest level of government. And what I meant then is not the mafia, not Giancana or Trafficana, but when Robert Mayhew of the CIA and FBI hires Trafficana, he comes from the highest levels of government, from the National Security Council. Conspiracies, in Brussels' view, have dictated the course of American political life for the past 12 years. He dated it 12 years, although I started my work when John Kennedy was killed, and that was in 1963. And at that, he's talking about the point that I caught on that there were the conspiracies 12 years ago. I hadn't done any research before that time. My research, Brussels told the Elgin audience, indicates the assassinations of John and Robert Kennedy, Malcolm X, Martin Luther King, events such as Chappaquiddick, murders committed by the Manson family, Watergate, the kidnapping of Patty Hearst, all are trained to the same source. And that source, in the United States, Brussels maintains, emanates from two places here, the Pentagon and the National Security Council. And I think with the Iran-Contra affair is the first time the American people can see the Department of Defense and the NSC as being the kingpins. That General Wilson from Pellegrin was stating in the Philadelphia Press that I cited for you, 90% of our work is Defense Department, 10% is the CIA, so they're fall guys. And if you hear Ollie North's name in every bit of testimony, North did this, North did that, remember that behind North is Fritz Kramer. I didn't know his name then, but I knew the National Security Council. The article says, Brussels believes that the nucleus behind the conspiracies is a continuation of the Third Reich. And that is the important point that has to be remembered about these heroin dealers, assassins. The Third Reich, coming right out of Germany and Reinhard Gehlen, and John J. McCloy and Alan Dulles and William Donovan and William Casey and Vernon Walters, is the Third Reich. It isn't drug dealers. It is control of the world for persons who want to make the world all white, all Aryan, and are presently eliminating all the population in Africa by way of diseases, droughts, and even testing the neutron bomb. I said their headquarters were, he had it wrong, Bermuda. They were Montego Bay in Jamaica, the headquarters of the British intelligence, William Stevenson, combined with the American OSS and CIA. She singled out the Howard Hughes financial empire as being the most powerful organization in the world today. Now, the Howard Hughes organization hired Robert Mayhew, who was FBI and CIA, but went under the Hughes organization because it was a private organization, just like TCI or Stanford Technology Training Group is a private organization, and they hired Mayhew. Now, the Christic suit begins with Robert Mayhew meeting with Santos Trafficante, Meyer Lansky's associate, and setting up the team that were allegedly to kill Fidel Castro and be part of the Bay of Pigs invasion, which has not taken place and I believe did not intend to happen. As I say, it was the whipping boy to get Castro. But the important thing here is that 12 years ago, I was singling out the NSC and the Pentagon. 12 years ago was the Hughes organization. 12 years ago was the Third Reich. And I'm going more into the Third Reich with John Singlaub and Jesse Helms for the next few weeks. She singled out the Howard Hughes financial empire as being the most powerful in the world and cited as proof of his alleged control of the all-inclusive data bank located outside Salt Lake City, guarded by the Mormon Mafia, and used substantial involvement in the construction of international communication system. She accused the Hughes organization of involvement in the conspiracy that murdered John Kennedy. Howard Hughes is no longer alive. He was buried 3 years ago off a Greek island, which he was, by Aristotle Onassis, and it was Onassis's yacht that housed Hallmar Schacht, the father-in-law of Otto Skorzeny, and all the top Nazis. As soon as John J. McCloy and Alan Dulles McCloy particularly had them released from the prison in Germany. Yet the danger remained, she told her listeners, because the inner circle of the conspiracy is certainly non-monolithic. It is spread out in the United States, Europe, South Africa, Although diversified, everyone involved at high level of my research, everyone involved is a Nazi. And she warned, beware of the Nazification of America, and urged them to work against Ronald Reagan. Now, he was governor, but he wanted to be president, and he was governor in California from 66 to 74. He had just been out 1 year. Be careful of Reagan. He has been selected by the secret team to be the president, and he is the Führer. And that point has been missed by too many people for too long. They have to go back to the early career of Reagan at Warner Brothers and with the House on American Activities and with Errol Flynn and the milieu of Hollywood where Reagan circled and how his career was put to the point where he has us on the verge of World War III in the Persian Gulf. The John Kennedy assassination, this article goes on, quoting me from the lecture, remains a focal point of her conspiracy theory. In contrast to Warren Commission critics who are citing a mafia CIA Cuban links in the events in Dallas, Brussels goes back to the testimony of the Warren Commission, the hearings themselves, and of course I've never stuck with the background that the anti-Castro Cubans, the mafia, and renegade CIA were behind all of this. They are simply the leg people for a larger conspiracy, and this article goes on, and then it quotes the part that these people should be farmed out, let them grow fruits and vegetables and be productive, and called a conspiracy farm. People involved in these conspiracies should be let out and kept away from public life. And then he quoted a statement I made about the Warren Commission, which is identical to the Senate, House, Iran hearings now. Every conspiracy has a cover-up. She cited the Warren Commission report as a classic example because of the manipulation of witnesses, which is what we're seeing now, not asking the right questions, which we're seeing now, not using the testimony of the witnesses when it doesn't fit in with their conclusions. And these stories about the anti-Castro Cubans, the mafia, and the CIA connections to Dallas are a second layer cover-up for the Third Reich, which was set up in Germany before the war was over. And there's a lot more to this article, but I did want to mention the points about Reagan. And then it goes into mind control and the use of mass murders to do a lot of the murders, and the Reinhard Gehlen operation, which I've written about for a long, long time, starting with my first published article, Why Was Martha Mitchell Kidnapped? And it is very important to keep the eye on the Pentagon and the NSC and the Howard Hughes organization. The Hughes aircraft just sold and merged with General Motors, and several billions of dollars went to the Hughes Medical Institute, and they are now capable of funding all kinds of genetic experiments or diseases, and hardly accountable. They send money, millions and millions, out to hospitals, institutions, colleges, military, and there's nothing but cash flowing in for these various experiments. Now, getting to this secret team, giving the background of what I did and wrote about, and as I say, 12 years ago, that goes very fast, 12 years, I want to just mention a little bit about the testimony of John Singlaub and Mr. Gomez Rodriguez and Joseph Kurz, not Kurz particularly, but he's part of that team, because there is very high drama going on at those hearings. I hope you are taping them if you have television, if you're having radio, if you have radio, tape it off the air. These characters don't have swagger sticks. They don't wear black boots. They don't have armbands. They don't click their heels. But you're looking at the stone killers, the meanest killers, the Nazis. Not only are they drug dealers, but their affiliations are with Nazis, with the Gestapo, with the Fourth Reich. The Reich is very much alive, and to look at the table of the people questioning them, you'd think they were dining with kings and queens and giving them accolades and praising them to the heavens. Of course, John McClure of Idaho was on the board of World Anti-Communist League with John Singlaub and Jesse Helms and a team of others I'll do more about in a few minutes. But they just praise them as wonderful people. And the Democrats on the committee are little lambs who are almost embarrassed to ask a question that may give you one more view of that itty-bitty spectacle we're seeing that the media calls the secret team. The printed media is doing a wonderful job. I can hardly keep up with the newspapers' articles, file them, cross-file them, or read them. But that Iran-Contra hearing is the absolute worst. I've studied the Warren Commission, the Korea Gate, and the Senate Watergate Committee. I mean, I used to have a button. Well, I have a button, but I haven't put them out on the wall for a long time, a button collection. Where is Lee Harvey Oswald now that we need him? Now we need one. Where is Leon Jaworski now that we need him? I thought he was terrible. But this Senator Inouye and these people at this panel are the only word to say is disgusting but consistent. They're part of the secret team, and they are going to cover up as much as they can. Therefore, as I say, the Christic Institute civil suit is maybe the only chance in the United States that we will ever get to get a glimpse of these people. And you can send checks to them. I'll give you their address and help support them, get information, and spread the word about the defendants they have, because they are indeed part of that secret team. I'll take a one-minute break, give you the address of Christic after that, and continue with the secret team.